Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the regular business meeting for January 26, 2016. The time right now is about 7:03 p.m. Ms. Smoot, will you please call the roll?
Certainly, council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cutaback, Rasmussen, Davis, Campbell, and Scarborough.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutaback. Oh, before we begin, Councilmember Camp had already announced that he wouldn't be here this evening, so unless there's objection, we'll consider him excused. Councilmember Cutaback, will you please lead us in the pledge?
Thank you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We're now going to move on to comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Testimony, or rather comments, are limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Is there anybody interested in coming forward and speaking this evening? Do we have anybody on the sign-up sheet? Okay. For the recording, there's nobody on the sign-up sheet, and nobody's come forward to say anything this
nobody
evening.
Here.
There's nobody here. Except for Chris and staff. Hi, Chris.
Chris is like staff.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to approve a consent agenda.
Second.
Okay. Councilmember Rasmussen has moved to approve the consent agenda. Councilmember Cutaback gave the second. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. And the ayes this evening will be from our pirate chief.
Aye.
All right. So this evening is... we have sort of a study session format, if you will, this evening. We only have one item on the agenda. That item is, and let me just scroll up to the title of it for the recording. This is Strategic Financial Planning. This is Agenda Bill number 16013. It's new business item number one. So I'm just going to go ahead and give an intro on this. We're probably looking at a couple of meetings to go over, probably a few meetings to go over budgeting. As you know, over the last couple of years, the budget that I've given to staff, the directions that I've given to staff, which I do in June each year, is to bring forward what's called a status quo budget. So a status quo budget means that we hold the line at the services that we provide within the constraints of the budget that we have. And as costs rise, what that means is we do less. We do more with fewer people, or we do less in terms of services. And so rather than, and there are some mayors, there are some executives that will go ahead and spring on council October 1st of each year the budget, which will include new positions, new services, new revenues, and all this other stuff. And then the council or the legislative body is put in a position of having to react to what the executive body brings forward. And that's not how I prefer to do things. My preference is to have a conversation early in the year when we're not under the gun to try to get a budget approved before the end of the year, find out what council's pleasure is, because you are responsible for policy and for budget, so that I can give directions to staff in June as to what sort of budget to bring forward. So this evening, as part of budgeting, there are a couple of different categories that we look at. One is operations, that's sort of your ongoing day-to-day costs. One is the capital. A lot of these are one-time expenditures. And then, of course, with costs, then those have to balance with revenues. Our revenues here are primarily from sales tax. That's the majority of our revenues, which tends to swing from year to year. There are some years you have really, really good years. There are some years that you can have bad years. And then also from property taxes. Property taxes are a more stable revenue source. They're kind of linear in how they occur from year to year. And so that's sort of a very generalized difference between the two. And so what it is that we'd like to go over, what staff and I would like to go over with you tonight, are some of the changes in level of service that council could consider as part of looking at the 2017 budget. And as you scroll through here, what you're going to see are things that we've either heard about from other boards and commissions, like the Planning Commission. I think there's a code enforcement position in here, and that is something that's been requested of the Chamber, the Downtown Association, the Planning Commission, and at least a couple council members over the couple years that I've been here. You're going to see things in here that have been suggested or recommended by outside agencies, like the State Auditor. The first one there being to point out would be the Accountant. This year we had another way that we were able to accommodate that request, but ultimately having an accountant on staff would be preferred. And then there are things that we've heard from citizens. So these are some of the things that we're going to see as we go through these. Rather than just give you a list of things that we need an accountant, or we need a this, or we think we need a that, we've gone ahead and we've identified an annual cost associated with each one of these. When we get to the capital side, some of those things you'll see are annual costs, like putting money away for road improvement projects. However, some of them might be one-time costs, because capital projects, you build them, and then aside from maintenance, they're built, they're done, you move on. At the end of all of this, we will have a dynamic spreadsheet, which I understand that some council members have experience with going back to budgeting a few years ago, that the idea is that we should be able to display the spreadsheet up on the wall right there, and council members should be able to say, we don't want to do any of it, in which case we zero out all the lines and you see what that means financially. Or we want to do all the cost increases but none of the revenue increases, and you go ahead and you check off all the boxes to do all of that without the revenue, and then you get to see the lines look a certain way, and so on and so forth. So we do plan on having that sort of conversation at the end of all of this. And like I said, this is not approving, well, I didn't say this, but this is not approving the budget for 2017, but what it's doing is it's giving us your vision for what it is that you'd like to see come forward in a 2017 budget. And at the end of all this, you may tell us, no, we just want a status quo budget. And that's your prerogative as council members. But we thought that having this sort of conversation now early in the year would be a benefit. Before we begin, do any council members have any questions? Okay. Councilmember Scarborough.
Yeah, I wonder if I can get this in. Can you run this off for me so I can see it and take it home in paper and study it?
Yep, we can certainly do that. Absolutely. Okay, staff, before we start going through the line items, is there anything that staff, Gene, that you, Chief, that you'd like to add? Mr. Farrell.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to point out a typo on the sheet with the level of service improvements from community input, where there's listing different positions. If you go to page 2, the one for park seasonal workers, the annual cost should be, it's for two park seasonal workers, it should be $25,000, which is not the other number.
$25,000?
Right, so okay. It should be
$25,000. That's a little different.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and we'll revise that, and we'll get that out to council members. So staff will revise that, and then we'll send out the PDF that with the revised number to council members so that you have that. Okay, is there anything else before we go into the line items? Okay, Gene, do you have any remarks?
I do not.
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and just start going down the line of what we have. The first one that we have on the list is an accountant. And Ms. Nelson?
The accountant position is something that there are some things that we're not doing financially with the accounting that we probably should be doing when an audit, they don't audit absolutely everything in your books, but if they decide to audit these certain areas, they are going to find us out of compliance. And so that is something that for a few years now we've been needing someone to come on board, because there's just too much work for just one person to do. And so one of the things the auditor said we had to do was have outside knowledgeable in government financial reporting from the outside review the financial statements that I prepared, because there was no one to have oversight over the work I was doing. And the way we got around that is we hired another finance director. It cost us, I think, about $7,000 to review our financial statements for us. And so that was cheaper than hiring a whole person, because that's all we could afford. And so we got that taken care of. If we had another accountant staff, they could do that work instead of hiring an outside party. There's some other things that we're not doing. The business licenses, when we raised the fee to $50, part of that increase was a portion of that money was supposed to go to technical improvements. We've never tracked that. We just dump it all in the general fund, and we don't separate that out and track it and how much and dedicate that money, because we just don't have the staff to do that. There's other things we do like that. Gas tax revenues that we get that we have to dedicate to paths and trails. I just take a rounded number out of the street fund and dump it into the park CIP fund, and then I don't track it after that. And so we need better tracking and someone to be on top of that. Impact fees, when they come in, you have 6 years to spend them, or you have to give them back. I just track this, I'm pressed for time, I just track the total received for the year, not by the fee. And other cities I've worked in, I've actually done the impact fees work, and all other cities track it by the fee. And we just don't have the staff to do all that. And so there's a lot of things like that that we're not doing. We're getting by, but if we do get audited, like on those specific areas, we would be found out for clients. And so there's a bunch of little things like that that are not getting done. Plus, if we had a staff accountant, then it would free me up. Instead of doing the month-to-month reconciliations, I could start focusing on strategic budgeting, like 5 years. I would like to do a rolling 5-year budget that's not necessarily adopted by, well, maybe by resolution, maybe not by ordinance, but you could look at a wider horizon. You could look back 5 years and look forward 5 years at any given time. You can make decisions on a broader horizon rather than year to year, which is what we're doing right now, which is rather short-sighted. So there's a lot of things like that. Oh, and also the auditors, because we don't have a lot of staff, so we can't segregate duties, the auditors say it's up to me to monitor what everyone's doing and to do spot checks and all. I don't have time. I'm up to here doing, you know, accounting work and reconciliation. So a lot of the monitoring work, I just don't do, even though the auditors say you need to be doing this. So that's what an accountant would get us if we hired an accountant.
Okay. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? And Councilmember Gamble's thinking.
What's that?
Do you have any questions? Or
I just wanted a reminder on, you said it on the record a while ago. Diane, when you've got that retirement date out in front of you, correct?
April 30th, 2017.
That's what I thought.
I don't have on my phone.
Any of those could answer that question.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to, as we have discussions on, you know, on this, and we look on all of these positions in the aggregate, that we probably should be mindful as we look out in the years ahead of us of where we're at from a leadership across the board and what makes sense from that perspective as well. So that might, you know, dictate which way we go on, you know, where we want to put our focus. But I just wanted to make sure. And
wait,
I mean, you said that so quick, we might as well put it on the website. I mean, geez. Thank you very much.
So before we move on to Councilmember Scarborough, that is one other thing to be aware of, is that when we bring forward a 2017 budget, something for consideration is having a transition plan in place to have a director, especially finance, phasing out it's good to have some overlap with another body, and we will probably want to bring, we'll probably want to begin our search for that position as early as the end of this year. I mean, April 1st comes along pretty quickly, and it took us a while to bring in a community development director. So those are some things that we will be thinking of on staff. Certainly the budget component of it would be something that we would be looking at probably beginning in January. We'll, you know, talk to Diane and find out how much time there should be overlap, but that could add money. It would be a one-time funding to next year, but that's something else to be aware of. Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
You said you hire somebody for $7,000 to audit your reports. How, so you do that four times a year or once a year?
Once a year.
Once a year. And how long do you think it would take somebody to double hat at your job to get them comfortable with being our new finance person?
Oh, a finance director? It depends on the finance director you hire. If they have municipal, if they were municipal finance director beforehand, not long at all, maybe a month. Because okay. The job's the same, it's just knowing the particulars throughout the city. If they come from the private sector, they're going to need a good 6 months. If they just have very strong government accounting or finance experience, but have not been a director, then I would probably give them 3 months.
Have you had anybody that you've talked to that you think might be interested in the job that in the 1 month category?
and part of the trick there is that we have to do a notice on it. So
sure, but you might have people going, "Well, you want to know when you're leaving? I'm going to put my name in the hat." So
okay, anything further? Okay, Councilmember Cutterback.
Saying we're not able to do this full time. Is there any kind of option for either increasing the contract work per month or a part-time position could get, especially what the auditors want us to do?
A part-time position is better than nothing. Yes, okay. Happy to take part-time. The person who did the review for us is a full-time finance director. It would not want to do any more additional work.
Sure. But say that, do you think a part-time position for what we need to get done for the auditors would work for this position possibly?
It would get some of it done, not all of it.
Okay.
You need a full-time person to get all of it. The city used to have a utility billing manager that did all the utility reconciliations. They used to have a treasurer who did all the account reconciliations and a finance director. They had three people, and now you have one, a finance director. So there's a lot of work. I mean, I work pretty fast, but there's a lot that I just can't get to.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other council members have any questions at this time? Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the next one, deputy city clerk duties, and would this be Mr. Brazel or Ms. Smoot?
Yeah, and certainly Liz is here to answer any questions as well. This is a position we've talked about, I think it goes back several years. We've yet to fill the position of deputy clerk. Some of the duties that would happen under this position is records management. That's something we've been talking about. Currently, we really don't have a program in place. Public Works maintenance staff actually help do some of the shredding and going organizing some of the files and that type of thing. This person would be in charge of that program. They'd also be in charge of the hearing examiner administration. Right now, it's done under planning, and we have kind of a roster that needs to be maintained of hearing examiners. The contracts need to be updated periodically. That's typically a task that's handled at the clerk's office in other cities. And then, of course, the public records requests side of things. Liz spends a ton of hours every day, every month, working on public records requests and isn't able to assist a lot of the other departments with the requests that they're receiving, such as building and planning and public works, because she doesn't have that time. And so the deputy clerk would also fill that need that we have. You want to add this?
Sure.
having a fully trained certified backup to the city clerk position. When I'm not here, there are certain functions that cannot be covered by anybody else just because they do not have the title of deputy city clerk and they're not trained. So it's always good to have someone who actually has that title and is fully trained to take my place when I'm not here. Which that means that most of the time I'm on vacation or something like that, I'm often doing work outside of the office just so that I can actually take that vacation. or if I'm at a conference or anything like that. So it just sort of behooves the city to have that backup, to have that other person here. And also having someone that's fully trained in the public disclosure, you have another person that can help everyone else on staff out. Being able to answer those hard questions and also help them specifically with preparing documents to go out the door. The one thing too is kind of like Diane, right now I'm doing mostly just operational work and I can't do any sort of help beyond that. So really a huge help would be for me to be able to be freed up to work on citywide programs of records management. As Jean mentioned, we do have a storage room out back that probably those documents need to be looked through. They need to be organized. We need to figure out what needs to stay here, what needs to go. A lot of staff is doing that on their own, but it's not holistic. So it'd be good for me to be able to get in there and get people on a regular schedule. Also, documents have not been microfilmed since 2008, and that is a large project to go back and look at all of the permanent retention documents, make sure they're all whole, and then get that going. And that's a project that I or the deputy could work on together, but at this point that's just a project that's not even on the radar. And then, you know, just over there, you know, the training for staff. Right now I basically answer questions when people have them, and we make changes when people bring something to my attention that I wasn't aware that they didn't know. So it'd be nice to kind of do some more preventative instead of reactive kind of training and get people on board with that, and that's with records management, with public disclosure requests, and then also, you know, managing the boards and commissions. And then the biggest one too is special projects. I just fit them in as I can, but we really need to update our public disclosure policy. I don't think that's been updated in quite a few years as well. And especially with the court, we need to make sure they're added in, so that's a big project that I'd like to do soon. And then, you know, just helping with a lot of these other projects, getting an electronic document management system, which we do not have at all. So that means that would help us with managing those records electronically and also being able to assist with public disclosure requests. But this is a project where, again, it's time allowed. So having a deputy to take on more operational work also frees me up to kind of work in those more strategic planning items and whatnot, you know, kind of similarly to Diane's position as well.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
You mentioned public records requests. Has there been an increase for public record requests lately? Or over the months, over the years?
Absolutely. Actually, last year we went up. We've been averaging about 160 for the past couple of years, and last year we were at 260. And part of that is that I was able to provide some training to staff, and they realized that they needed to be tracking more things that they weren't tracking before, and that was a portion of it. And also, we just got slammed with a whole lot of public records requests. Most of them are planning and permitting related, and so planning and permitting and building, that staff spent a lot of time on public records requests last year, and then spent a lot of time kind of helping them with their questions as they were working through. So there has been a large increase. I do have, you know, they did a survey through the Attorney General's office last year because they actually passed a bill saying we need more data on what's going on in cities. So in December, I submitted information from our city about all of these numbers, you know, and they're collecting all of that data to see holistically what the true impact on all these cities is. And I know at this time there's actually a couple of bills out there right now. I believe our lobbyists are looking at them related to public records requests that hopefully might be able to help us a little bit. But it's definitely gone. It's definitely gone up.
And is it any one person in particular, or is it just the system?
Nope, it's just a lot.
And the other question, you don't work Mondays, correct?
That is correct.
Do you work 4/10s?
Yes, within
okay.
Contract.
So there's no giving you a fifth day that's going to help any of that? Because that puts you in overtime.
Correct, okay. That's my contract at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. The $100,000 annual cost, is that including benefits?
Yes.
Package and everything, is that
Yeah, it's a round number for benefits and salary. Is that correct?
Thank you.
Okay, anything further? All right, next item then is code enforcement. Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, when last year when I did the presentation during the budget period about community development, the community development department, I said think about community development in four buckets. And one bucket is planning land use, the second bucket is building, the third bucket is economic development, and the fourth bucket is code enforcement. And from a legal standpoint, from the land use standpoint, we have obligations under state law to process land use permits within a certain time period. So we have to get those out. The building permits are under the auspice of the state building code. We have specific requirements to satisfy state building code requirements, local building code requirements. We have to get those processed. Economic development, is it required? Well, if you want to drive business development and help business to succeed, to increase the tax base, provide the other services, I would say yes. Code enforcement is that fourth bucket, and given there are three buckets, code enforcement tends to fall down in terms of the priority of the workload of our department, and quite frankly, we just can't get to it. I mean, we can get to it, we're not going to ignore it, but our ability to get to it promptly or as quickly as has been the case in other local governments and jurisdictions I've been at just isn't there. And just to kind of give you an idea of some of the items that we've run across, since the time I've been here, obviously illegal buildings, illegal structures, those are life safety issues, and we'll go out and deal with those fairly promptly. But then there's also items that are people living in trailers illegally. We've got to get to those, but we're not able to get to those as quickly as we'd like. We get to other ones that are life safety issues, clearing in critical areas on hillsides. So we've had a couple of those we've had to deal with. And we'll get to those promptly. But I just got to tell you, a lot of this is letter writing, because people that are violating a law, or that we feel are violating a law, have certain rights, and our code says we have to go through certain processes in order to try to remedy the situation. So we're spending a lot of time trying to get voluntary compliance, we're spending a lot of time letter writing, and we're just not able to get to many of the items that we need to get to. And certainly, when we had a discussion with the Planning Commission in December about what we're planning to do this year in terms of writing codes, one of the items that they said was, well, if we're going to write codes and do code amendments, let's make sure we can enforce them. And so things like the sign code, I mean, they brought up the sign code, the feather banners, when are you going to get to those? Well, it's just not on our priority list. I don't want to say it that way. But it's not just because we've got all these other things we need to do. So this code enforcement officer is one of the gaps I think we have in our department in terms of things that we're just not able to get to as quickly, as promptly, and as efficiently as I hope that we could. The other item I would expect the code enforcement officer to do is one of the best things in terms of code enforcement is to make sure the violation never happens, and that occurs through education. And be a good code enforcement officer that can go out, have those discussions with the community groups, community organizations, write newsletters, write brochures, hand them out, getting to a point where hopefully a lot of the violations won't even occur because people are educated. Because in many cases, when you go out and actually tell someone that they are violating the code, they didn't know what the code was, and they're pretty quickly are able to deal with that. So I'm hoping for a code enforcement officer to deal with education, to get to some of these code violations quicker, and to deal with some of the items that we simply can't get to. And then I'm hoping also, but it's just a matter of whether it exists or not, some capacity, to get a good code enforcement officer that can do some of the simpler land use applications, or to help out on some of the simpler ones, to get those processed through, to free up some time for the associate planners and senior planners in the department.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
This is, I think this is a problem and a concern. We heard that a lot with the sign ordinance. Like you mentioned, a lot of people came forward in the public and said, if you have this code, how, you know, enforcement is a big part of it. How are you going to do that? my question to you is same as Diane. Could this be done, not maybe ideally, but to get some of the enforcement done as a part-time position?
Part-time here would be 70 hours, 40, well, you know, less than 20 hours.
Less than 20 hours.
We tried that when we were looking for, a community development director, part-time planner, any of that, and we got no luck. There's just
fire.
Yeah, I mean, now it's going back, you know, they cut back really hard, but there were lots of planners looking for work in, you know, 2008 to 2010, and then they really started building their community development departments back up in the last year or two, so I don't know that there's any out there.
Market.
Yeah.
And my other question is, I know that we've talked separately about parking enforcement, and is there, and I know that's separate than code enforcement, but is there any way to package that together? That's one thing that's missing too. There's not enough time to do the parking now that we have limitations downtown, and people have said, now you have limitations, but who's down there enforcing it? So, you know, just trying to be creative here. Is I know, you know, the code enforcement on is different than the parking enforcement, but if we were to, any way to package that?
That I don't know, because that would be unique in terms of, usually in community development, the code enforcement officers focusing on private property, and then when there's some type of violation in the right of way, it would be the police department.
Right.
So that would be a unique mix that I haven't dealt with before.
Just thinking, trying to think creatively to think, you know, is it a position that's part-time police, part-time, you know, planning, and can, you know, as they're enforcing the sign ordinance, also be looking at parking. I don't know, just making a suggestion, because that's another gap we have, is the enforcement of the parking regulations downtown. So, all right, thank you.
Okay, and Gene stepped out briefly, so the question was whether or not the code enforcement position can be part-time. Staff responded to that, pointing out that it was hard to find somebody part-time for the planning position that we opened up mid-year. And then Councilmember Cuddeback went ahead and asked the next logical question is, could the person do both code enforcement and also parking enforcement? So staff will go back and look to see if that's something that we could do. If that's something that PD has to do for the parking, for example, and or if it can run dual duty between the two departments. Okay. All right. Next item then is any other items on that? Councilmember Gamble?
So, yeah, just based off your past experience on the code enforcement piece, and you've worked at cities before where they had a department that was, you know, as a focus. When it gets to the point of potential or like litigation, does that operate through the city court system, or how? Walk me through how that works. What cost associated to us for?
Okay. The general process would be you're doing a violation, so I come and talk to you, and you might just say, oh, I didn't realize I was violating it, I'll take care of it, and then we'll try to do the way it works right now, to avoid the letter writing, say, okay, if you get it done in a week, we'll come back in a week, you've done it, great, no problem. But if we feel that we need to write you a letter to basically say you're in violation, first step is voluntary compliance, which you and I just did. The second step would be, we're not sure you're going to actually comply, we're going to write you a letter, a notice, basically saying you're in violation of law and you need to comply by X date. And then if you don't comply by X date, it's probably going to be a pretty egregious item, and we probably need to come to council to decide whether or not we want to go to court to actually enforce it in that respect. And so the cost, the first two in terms of cost, certified letters, letter writing, probably get compliance in maybe 90 to 95% of the cases in that particular situation. If the letter writing, the person says, I may need a little more time, okay, give them a little more time. But if we get to the point where we need to make that jump between compliance and then going to court, then the cost would be added up.
Yeah, that's all I was trying to do. I'm looking at this as more than just the cost of the $100,000 you would have to, in my opinion, on this one in particular, you talk about bunching, you'd have to take it, look at the budget and also look at attorney services associated if we did formalize that process, would be my only.
Okay.
Thanks.
Sounds good. So what I'm going to add then is to look into ongoing costs slash legal fees associated with
code enforcement. Yeah, and I guess, you know, I mean, really it would be, I mean, whether it's going after Mr. Osaki's experience or just reaching out for those that do have a pretty stringent code enforcement program. Hey, 90-95% of the time you're able to take it through the means we just talked about, but that 5%, and maybe it's just because of all the other stuff we've been through in the last X amount of years, the top of mind, you know, of that 5%, what does that equate to on average and attorney services that you're going to pay in excess by, you know, having that code enforcement problem? And, you know, hey, what do you get back, you know, as well? I mean, but what is... having some sort of idea, because it would have to be budgeted for.
Okay.
Because it would be an increase.
Okay. Anything further? All right. Next item is also Mr. Osaki's. This is a permit tech.
Actually, going back to code enforcement.
Sure.
One of the items, I don't know if we'll get to this year, but one of the items I'd like to do is take a look at our code enforcement procedures in code to possibly give the city a little more latitude and enforcement capability between the letter writing and going to court, which may mean issuing citations and going to municipal court and those types of things. So I think when we come back, we'll talk about those types of options that might exist too, but they would require amendments to the city code.
That would be great.
All right, sounds good. Permit tech.
Permit tech, this one I'll be fairly quick on. Just as background, we currently have a permit tech who is part-time for 70 hours a month. And this one I gave a lot of thought to, because this one is driven by development activity, obviously. And so having gone through the Great Recession and having staffing, having to lay off people, I gave a lot of thought to whether or not you really want to bring maybe a half-time position to a full-time position. I think I know we're there right now. I mean, Liz talked about the records requests and the records requests that come in through the department, and how you could have staff working on a variety of other things, but then be inundated with public records requests. You just kind of got to stop and be able to respond to those, because you're obligated under state law to respond to those public records requests within a certain period of time. My philosophy generally is the most important people in the community development department are going to be the permit techs, because they're the first people the public deals with. They take in the information, they take in the permits, and they actually orchestrate the whole permit process by sending those permit applications out internally and maybe externally to the fire district, and take those comments back in so that we can have the planners or the building staff begin to prepare letters to provide back to the applicants. I'm just looking at the level of activity that's happened during the course of the time I've been here, and I'm beginning to look at the pipeline that exists in terms of pre-application meetings. Who knows what's going to happen to the economy? I mean, I just have no idea, but if we're going to stay on this track run right now, that extra 90 hours for this permit tech position, in terms of helping on noticing, helping on crafting letters, bringing up time for the senior planners, even bringing up time for myself, for a variety of different things. Demand exists for that. And it's an if this. How do I say this? We're space challenged in the city right now. And if I was going to say one of the items that's really important for good permit processing, it's having the space to be able to process the plans and keep the plans. And we're a little challenged on that right now, and it's really going to be helpful to have another set of eyes who's here probably another 90 hours a month to begin to keep those plans where they need to be and keep track of everything that's going on. So this one's a level of service type improvement to really drive us to be better at processing permits and providing customer service. Based on the current level of demand and development activity that's going on. If we drop by 80% or drop by 50% in terms of development activity, I'll just concede you don't need that position, but right now I think it's there.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Is the 80 the total cost, or is that the increase? So it would increase 80,000. What's an annual salary for permit tech then? That's increasing 80 grand? Seems high.
It's the same question I had.
Is
that the budget? Is that the annual cost of the position, or is that the budgeted cost in addition? The way that it reads, it's the annual cost of the position. And if it's already at 70, then it would be, what's the difference?
Yeah.
I think it is the difference.
Keep in mind, the person only works 70 hours a month now. Gets no benefits. So
it's 18
hours a week.
Right.
We're just paying a straight wage.
Correct.
When you have a deputy city clerk, which we don't have now, that you say the annual cost is 80, and that's no hours, and then you have a...
So we're paying very little right now for a part-time person with no benefits. Very little. As soon as you make them full-time, you have to start doing all the benefits.
Yeah, no, I get that. And do they get a salary increase? It just seems like a huge difference there. You know, you would maybe even expect 50 grand or 60, but another 80 on top of what they're currently making. What are they making annually right now?
I went to Sherry's spreadsheet on this one and calculated out the difference, and that is the difference.
It's 80 grand. Okay. Is there any, just again, here's creative, you know, any reason to make something like this? You know, as you were talking about, there's ebbs and flows, you can't predict, you know, construction happens seasonally. I mean, there's parts of the year that you're busier than others. Is this a position that has any type of seasonal, or you just couldn't think you could get someone good, just like...
I don't think you could get somebody good.
To do kind of contract seasonal work.
I mean, the development review process is seasonal.
Yeah.
I mean, especially in late winter, you begin to ramp up in the spring, and then through the summer, you're scheduling inspections, and it goes into the fall. And then there's probably a couple months in the winter where you get a lull, but I don't know if you want to get somebody to... It goes back, I think, exactly what you said, is someone... I
find
somebody that wants to work in that type of scenario.
Okay.
There might be somebody, I don't know, but it's...
So if you had to put these in order of priority, the two that you just talked about, code enforcement or permit tech, which would you choose? Because you already have someone part-time, 18 hours a week for permit tech. Would you rather have them go to full-time or code enforcement?
Well, it's a great policy decision that...
asking your opinion.
My opinion. So,
trying to turn it back.
I think I would rather have the code enforcement officer only because it's a service... We're not providing a
good
job that I'd like to be able to do. But it's hard to say that when you're comparing it against process permits. But the way code enforcement works right now, the complaint comes in, and whoever touches the complaint pretty much has to take ownership of it. And that's not the way I like it to be, because sometimes I get the complaint, and then I'm taking ownership of it. And I'm doing, not that I don't like code enforcement, but I'm not looking at sheds and backyards. I could be doing other things. So code enforcement is really one of those buckets that I'd like to get a handle on. And so, but I have two really good permit staff and some part-time staff right now. I can make do. But code enforcement is really one of those things where it's just got marbles on the table and it's just hard to keep track of right now.
Well, you said in here that maybe a code enforcement person could do simpler land use permits, so...
It'd be an interesting mix, but I think I could train someone to do some of this.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, no, I had the exact same question, but and I would just ask that as we go forward, we discuss this one further. If you could break that down, Diane, in this, what is the annual cost, the actual annual cost, and then maybe what compared to the difference? Because when I read this, just the way it's presented, I was thinking, oh, it's only
$80,000.
What's the difference between the annual cost of what you're proposing and then what we're currently paying today? That's all.
Okay, the increase is the $80,000. I think we're paying about $30,000 right now.
Okay. So, yeah. That's why I want to see it broken. I want to see it line item, Jane, if we can.
Yeah, we'll do that.
So you want to see the breakdown of how?
Yeah, I want to see it breakdown. Yeah, what's truly the, you know, the proposed budgeted annual cost, right, for this position at full time?
Oh, and then for the full time position.
For the full time position, what's
in addition to what we're currently
seeing. No, that could be a sub bullet. But what's the, you know, that would be a sub bullet off of saying, okay, hey, but yeah, really the difference is because we've already budgeted X amount of dollars, which is true.
Yeah.
And then we could talk about the difference. But in the line item in the budget, it's going to say, you know, the full amount.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you. Anything further on the permit tech? All right. Next one. Now we're going to go into the Parks Department. And Mr. Farrell, Parks Supervisor.
All right. Thank you, Mayor. So there's three items here in the Parks Department, and they are listed in order of priority that I would prioritize these three. I just want to give you some background. The Parks level of service has declined significantly over several years due to the recession and the corresponding staffing cuts. Meanwhile, events and athletic field use have nearly doubled in this time, and new parks facilities, trails, streetscapes, including a couple roundabouts, continue to come online to the parks and trail system. We've got a skate park that's coming on as well later this year. So when these come online, along with their added maintenance obligations, Rotary Field came online and we were in a decline. We were sustaining staffing cuts, and the all-weather surfacing for athletic fields required a whole different level of maintenance and attention than the grass fields, for example. So the labor cut stopped about 3 years ago, and our department has been on a status quo ever since. Deferred maintenance has occurred due to the cuts, and that's contributed to increased repairs and replacement costs to the parks facilities. What we have is a lack of staff coverage throughout the park system, and that's made it problematic to effect timely repairs to broken equipment and facilities, address acts of vandalism, and also with patrolling and deterring transient camps. As we know, we partnered with the police and public works last summer, and you know, one message that came out of that addressing those camps last summer was that a lot of the stuff had been occurring at the time, and it had, you know, really grown, and it's something that as a community we really don't want to let it get to that point again in the parks. In addition, we've had an unfilled supervisor position, park supervisor, for the last 5 years. That's made it challenging to address park operations, maintenance, delays in service. It lowers our standards of maintenance, and it also hinders our development and supervision of employees. In that order, the park supervisor is a priority that we really need to fill in our department. And along with, secondly, would be a parks maintenance worker full time. And then lastly, in orders of priority, would like to increase our seasonal workforce. We're currently, we have 4 5-month positions, and I would like to propose that we increase that by 2 more parks seasonal workers.
Okay. Council members. Councilmember Gamble.
And the difference, just to reiterate your earlier comment, the seasonal workers one, that's the one that's 25, not 93?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. For 2.
Correct.
Anything further, Councilmember Gamble?
No, good.
Councilmember Scarborough.
Mike, you said you need a park supervisor to supervise some of the work. That parks usage has doubled. Is that what you said?
The events that we've had through these past several years of the recession and to today, we've seen the events double, and also the athletic field use has increased as well. Because a couple of things that we did is, one, the Rotary Field came online, and secondly, at Sky River Park, we had a project where we improved the drainage system for the soccer fields and the ball fields of that park, and so we've been able to increase the amount of games and practices that are played on those fields, and also along with just the games and practices, we've been averaging about close to 10 tournaments a year, and that's grown substantially as well.
Okay, then do we have a sense, Diane, of increased revenue anywhere? What has the revenue increased? If the usage is doubled, what has the revenue done that might give us the money to pay for these positions? I mean, you don't have to answer that right now, but
I can find out. The revenue has increased, but it doesn't come anywhere. The fees we charge don't come anywhere near to recoup the costs.
Okay.
But yeah, I can get you the history.
Yeah, ballpark's fine.
And before we leave that topic, there are some use fees, you know, in quotation marks, that don't recoup our costs. Not that we have to recoup our costs because we're not a business, you know, but there is a philosophical question of how much you charge somebody for parks. You know, how much is a general fund going to subsidize an organization doing events in our parks? But the same thing also would apply to community development and to inspections out of public works and so on and so forth. So when we do get around to talking about revenues and things like that, not tonight, even though I do see that it's on here, that is something else to realize, is that there are some jurisdictions, and I'm not suggesting that we become one of them, that will bill out hour for hour and try to get 100%. They don't get 100%, but my point being is that they will try to get as much recovery of their costs as they possibly can. There are other jurisdictions that keep it very low, and you know that means that the funds come from the general fund, and that money then comes from PD, and it comes from finance, administration, parks, and so on and so forth. So anyway, that's just something to be aware of as we're proceeding over a conversation over the next couple months.
I wanted to add something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Also, another revenue impact, an economic impact, is these events that we've been putting on our community. Some of these are national scale, and we have people that are coming in for, you know, 3-4 days, lodging here in Monroe, restaurants, that sort of thing. So there's an indirect economic benefit, and actually some of these key events that we've been holding here in Monroe in our city parks, we've tracked that. The Snohomish County Tourism Bureau has tracked, you know, what that economic impact is. So there's not a direct fee, you know, the calculation from that, as Mayor's talking about, but there's been a definite uptick in that economic impact in a positive sense for our businesses.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. Just a very simple thing, lodging tax. Our hotels, during certain times of the year, we're fully booked. You know, I know that we could use more hotels here in town, but our hotels are fully booked, and people are being directed to Everett. Una used to say that they would occasionally get boxes of donuts from the Holiday Inn in Everett, thanking the chamber for directing people out there to stay for some of these events because things were so booked here. There are times where we'll have a couple of events over the same weekend, and then you throw in the fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not capturing all of that revenue from people doing overnight stays here because we don't have the hotels here. But where I'm going with that is just, it is a very easy thing. It's on Monroe this week in the left-hand side, and you can see that economic impact of the fairgrounds and of the softball tournaments and the triathlons and things like that happen in our park facilities. All right. Anything else? Mike? Okay. Councilmember Cutaback.
Mike, I know in my 6 years up here, the Parks Department is one where the budget has been cut pretty dramatically, especially, you know, my first 4 years on here, so I can understand wanting to add some more positions back. The part-time seasonal, you said we currently have 5, and you wanted to increase that to 7? Is that what I heard?
We have 4.
4?
4 5-month-long positions.
Oh, okay.
The seasonal position is 5 months long.
Okay. And you wanted to increase that to 7?
6.
You wanted 2 more. Okay. And then, with that, just to talk about revenue or the fee structure, do we charge people coming in from outside our community a little bit more to use our parks than somebody who is within our community?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so there is a difference there. Okay. And then I know one summer we had to cut back on watering dramatically throughout. I know this is looking at positions, but I know that was a big discussion. Were we caring for our parks? And we had a lot of people with all the, you know, how they looked and everything. So as we're looking at increasing service to parks, is in budgets coming up looking at making sure that we can water appropriately and care for them that way, also along with employee costs?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
The level of service that we can provide, let's say, with athletic fields, the watering and fertilizing, that, you know, so if you're not watering them, you know, that dries out and there's no point in fertilizing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, getting that full program. And what that does is it also makes a safer surface for people,
right.
Especially when you've got athletic activities and whatnot, too. So.
But that's not included in anything on here. That's just another cost set.
Yeah.
Okay. And then just talking about the two positions, the park supervisor and the parks maintenance worker, too. And I know that, you know, being a person who supervises a lot of people, sometimes it's great to have another supervisor, but it's also really great to have boots on the ground, somebody who's out doing the work. So when I look at the park maintenance worker too, it sounds like they're out there doing a lot of the stuff that's needed to get done out there. Would the park supervisor at times be a person who's boots on the ground out there also doing some of that work?
Exactly. It's a working supervisor. And you make a great point about, you know, boots on the ground and supervisor and numbers or supervisors.
Yeah.
And what we have currently is we have 5 maintenance workers and we have 0 supervisors.
Okay.
So we need 1 supervisor. So that's why I have that priority
listed like that.
And the maintenance worker. Yeah.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Before we move to the next people, one of the things that I think is missing in here, and Gene, correct me if I'm wrong, are the O&M that you just brought up, Councilmember Cutaback. Mm-hmm. We don't have O&M for things like irrigation, for streets and sidewalks, mowing. There are things that are not in this list that I will go back and revisit with staff. It was our intent to include those in this list, but I'll follow back up and see where those are.
Okay.
Councilmember Gamble.
I'm glad you brought up the Tourism Bureau piece. Actually, you guys hit both of the things I was going to ask, but maybe it's just on from a Parks Department's side of things. And when we're looking at this, maybe having some sort of data or information in showing what the revenue generation side of the equation is, because we're just looking at sheer expense. But what is the revenue generation associated, including, you know, we talked about all the additions that have been made, and some of those additions have brought, I mean, tournaments, anytime you add a synthetic field in, you're going to get more people that want to, you know, to play here. So that would be great to see that in the aggregate. And then also to see, when we're looking at that, you know, hey, we added the Pro Week Tour, some of the larger, you know, events and some of that type of stuff, you know, did we see a bubble on the revenue sales tax or that kind of stuff? And what, I know the Tourism Bureau has some math. I know we've talked about it before. I'm forgetting it off the top of my head. But that would be one thing. The other is on the question around, do we charge different fees for, you know, in-city resident, out-of-city, specifically, like for a tournament type of deal, I mean, I was thinking that would be much smaller scale, just running a facility, but for like a tournament, are we charging less for a...
local versus...
yeah, if you've got a local... Okay, so yeah, so if it is a City of Monroe institution that is going to run the tournament, then they'll we charge less?
Yeah, slightly less, yeah.
I was going to say, what's the difference between how much?
I don't know off the top of my head.
It's not significant. You said it's little, so it's not significant?
Yeah, but, yeah, we do charge the out-of-the-area tournaments, and we also put non-refundable deposits, too, because the difference between a local tournament and, say, something coming from Colorado is that if you got, say, a weather event or something and it's raining and whatnot, that event still has to happen in Colorado. They're not rescheduling it a week later because that's, you know, that's a regional thing. But your local tournament, they have the ability to, if they see something coming up, they can cancel it and they can reschedule it later
right
here. And so with, you know, the staffing, you know, the service we provide for that, so they'd say the one that's coming from Colorado, you know, be there through, you know, high water, say, to get those teams to go off versus if it was a local tournament, the tournament director may decide, you know, if it's a consultation with us, then, oh, let's cancel it and we'll
reschedule. Okay. Let me see. The other one I had was on the five maintenance workers that supervisor would oversee. Would they also oversee the seasonal workers? So it's actually nine currently.
And lead.
And lead. Okay. And then if you hired I work in ratios, so headcount ratios. So that's actually, it would be one supervisor to, you know, the total headcount would be around, if we added the additional two, right? So six, what, 11, and then a lead? So 12? Obviously, some is seasonal for that. Okay, so it's not just a 1-5. It's actually a 1-...
Wouldn't it be a 1-1, 5-point-something or 6-point-something since it's only 5?
6 plus seasonals that work for 5 months.
The thing I would argue in regards to that is even if they're seasonal, you're still doing the hiring, staffing. There's more than it just goes into that 5 months from a supervisor perspective.
I understand, but just as you said you work in ratios, wouldn't the ratio be?
Well, the ratios would actually be to FTEs, so you would do it to FTEs. So if you wanted to do it FTEs, but as far as people are concerned, it would be a 1-12. But yeah, technically you're talking about an FTE, you could do it based off of an FTE. But the component that you would still have to do from the other side, what I'm sure is a part of this, is that, I mean, if it's a seasonal worker, there's going to be a turnover in seasonal worker that you're not going to have in the permit. So you're going to be interviewing more than you would on the other side. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
You may have hit on it, Mayor, when you said O&M. My question was on your seasonal workers and your maintenance worker, too. Not so much a supervisor, but would these people provide a better, cleaner parks and facilities because we have them, or does that come under the O&M, somebody else is doing it? Because one of the complaints I hear around town is the garbage cans are overflowing, that nobody's picking up the stuff, the crows get in it, they scatter it, people get in it, they scatter it.
Exactly. A lot of that is just a lack of staff coverage, so it's about, you know, how frequently can that be addressed?
Yeah, my question is it
still addressing?
Is it going to be these people's responsibility to clean it up, or is it going to be O&M, operations and maintenance?
When we were talking about O&M, what we were talking about was the actual the cost of the water, the cost of the fertilizer.
Oh. Yes.
That's what we meant by O&M. These people are primarily doing operations and maintenance activities, but it's the supplies. As an example, we had trees dry out on Freilands Boulevard because of the dry weather this year. And when I contacted Mike to follow up on why they look so dry, why aren't we watering them, one of the response I got was, well, we haven't turned on the irrigation for a number of years. We don't even know if the irrigation is going to work. So,
and some of them don't have irrigation, too.
So right, and some don't have irrigation. Right. So the point there being is that we've got a number of years where we haven't even used some of the infrastructure that we have. So we need to get,
because we didn't want to use water.
Because we didn't want to use water, exactly. So you know, when I talk about O&M, that's, you know, potholes. Every once in a while I get phone calls from people complaining about a pothole. And, you know, those are things that we don't have budget for. That's the O&M I'm talking about. Okay, anything further on parks? All right, let's move into PD. Chief?
Excuse me, as some of you may remember, back in 2008, we had 36 positions for commission positions for the police department, and at times, at one time, it popped up to actually 37. And this was in the expectation that North Kelsey would be developed, and it was getting prepared for that. But when the recession hit, we lost positions. People retired, people left for other law enforcement positions. When we didn't fill those positions, we dropped down to 31, and then just recently we've brought it back up to 33 positions. Well, our calls for service match or exceed our 2008 calls for service. We or perhaps the council at the time underestimated the impact that Walmart would have on calls for service for law enforcement. This is the reason why we're requesting two additional positions as the city continues to grow. Law enforcement needs to grow along with it because our calls for services grow. Right now, we have a minimum number of officers on at any one time is 3. We used to have 4. We dropped that when we started losing people, and we would like to bring that back up to 4 because it's very much been proven that use of force diminishes with the number of units that are available to respond to a violent situation. You'll notice in there the monies that we're requesting for two officers is $165,000, and the remainder of approximately $35,000 of that would come from the 1/10 of 1%.
Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
So, Chief, so what I'm hearing is two officers cost approximately $195 a year.
About
$200. $200 a year. Maybe you know this, Diane, or maybe you do, Chief. What have we gotten from the sales tax revenue annually? Because we just started that. Do you know what it was? Because it's currently paying for something now, currently.
Yeah, it's paying for full-time for two officers.
It's paying for, I'm sorry, what, two?
Two officers full-time.
Okay.
So it's paying them?
100%.
Right.
So it's paying about $200,000.
It's paying more than that. It's also paying for Gabby.
Yeah, and we've included our front office person, front desk person.
Okay, which was hired this past year.
I think it was like 285.
Yeah, I think it's 286, I want to say.
Yeah.
So about 285, 286 is what we've been getting for that. Chief, do you know what our response time is currently? Top of your head.
What?
Part of the reason for requesting more officers is to decrease what the response time is currently. I was just curious, what is that response time to calls? Do you know what the average is?
Well, it depends what kind of calls you're talking about. If it's an extreme emergencies such as a domestic violence or the like, I believe it is under 3 minutes.
Okay.
But if it's someone's locked out of their motor home or something like that, it could be a little bit longer.
Yeah. One of my concerns with using the sales tax revenue fully for salaries is that we don't know what we're going to get year to year with that. That can change with, obviously, if we have another recession, our sales tax goes down, and when we've hired people, we've allotted pretty much that whole money for salaries, and if it doesn't come in, then the general fund will have to pick that up. So that's my only concern with
the projection. The 5-year projection is that it will
increase.
Yeah. substantially. It is much higher than what we projected in our budget for 2015.
And what you put in the budget 2015?
The sales tax?
The 1%.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and so this is a general comment about kind of all these positions. And when I look at these annual costs, I'm assuming that's dollars now.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I that's mean, dollars next year.
Dollars, but, yeah. 2017. So, I mean, the thing about employee costs is those will rise every single year. Benefits will increase. Merit increases are steps, you know, cost of living increases. So every year there'll be, once you hire someone, it is, you know, every year we're going to have an increased cost. So it's a little short-sighted of us maybe to look at just this one, you know, cost.
Because right.
There's going to be additional costs. So if we look at, well, you know, paying for it next year, we have to really think, are we able to hire a full-time position? As Mr. Osaki said, you know, when you hire that, and if you go into a recession, are you stuck in the position of laying off? And looking at, is this something we're going to be able to afford 2, 3, 4 years down the road?
Right. So just to address that point,
yeah.
When we put the spreadsheet up, the spreadsheet, when we plug in these, that goes into the future, when we plug these in, it includes a percent assumed increases. So
for the expense.
Yeah, for the expenses, yeah.
And it
absolutely
includes those positions in there?
When we get to the point where we're plugging in what council would like to look at, you know, if all of these are funded, then this is what the future looks like. There's a presumed, there's an assumed couple percent increase per year based on benefits and all these other things. So there's a complex spreadsheet with a whole series of things that populates upwards. And so the you are correct, that's a 1 year, and they are rounded up. Or rounded, I don't know if they're rounded up, but they are rounded numbers. Some of these are at 100,000, some of these are more specific, like the Parks Department. And, yeah.
But
go
they
ahead.
Aren't included in the current 5-year forecast, any of these positions?
No, they're not.
Okay.
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks. That's it.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
To Councilmember Cuddleback's point, the expenses are around 3-5% increase. Or what are we baking in that 5? I mean, the way I'm looking at it is we start to look at this going forward, or if we look at it, finance committee or whatever, and you're talking a 5-year look forward, we'd be looking at, I mean, the expenses are pretty fixed. I mean, we kind of know where, you know, where it's going to be, but then it would be multiple projections of where the revenue is going to come in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then I'm assuming, I haven't gone through the budgeting process under the old way, but I'm assuming it's like one of in other areas where when you change, okay, well, what's the revenue forecast look like if we're projecting bullish, bearish, status quo?
Yes.
That's what we're talking about, right?
Yes. Yes.
Make sure those lines stay separated.
Correct.
Got it.
Yeah, want the blue line above the red line going into future years based on logical assumptions and, yes.
In factoring in exactly what Patsy's talking about.
Right, yeah. And that becomes part of the conversation when we get into the revenues, is that we have the conversation about O&M tonight. We have a conversation about any sort of capital we want to put away for, including we'll be talking campus plan at some point, and then talk about the differences in the revenues. And like I said, property tax is a, you know, you can predict that fairly accurately, but sales tax, you're going to need to make a decision on, you know, high, low, medium in terms of projecting out into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the years where it's above the line, maybe we can use that extra money for one-time savings, or it goes into one-time capital projects. When it's below the line, you hope that you've got enough in, like, contingency to cover that delta. And then you hope that you don't have too many years that are below the line. So these are things we'll talk about.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, we do have the ability to look back just over the last couple of years to see what it's, yeah, what the worst looks like.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, you're welcome. Staff, do you have anything else to add? Okay, and again, this is just general fund. We're just focusing on the general fund. So, the things that I have sort of added to my list for 2017, when I've made a note that we need a transition plan for the finance director. somewhere between 1 and 3 months, and that would be a one-time expenditure in 2017. We probably want to start looking for a new employee at the end of this year rather than the beginning of next year, so I'll talk with staff about that. Code enforcement, ongoing costs, but also to include sort of the spinoff, which are the legal fees associated with that. Breakout the information for the permit tech costs for the existing, so that we can just make certain we understand that $80,000 increase on that sheet. And then also we want to add in the cost of O&M, so that would be where staff will come forward at the next meeting and talk a little bit about the things that we're not doing today that you know, like watering different things or mowing different areas. So we'll follow up with staff on that. Council, are there any items that are sort of O&M or levels of service that we're not doing today that you would like to see us consider as part of this exercise through this spring? Councilmember Cuddeback.
Well, I had mentioned, I don't know where it rises, and staff didn't bring it up, but I brought up the parking enforcement, and I know we have a community of police officer who does community currently, but I know that you've shared in the past that it's hard for them to really monitor, and we've had numerous discussions around parking and restrictions downtown, and I know I would think that would be a full-time, obviously, position, but maybe it rises to the level of what are we doing about it? Do we have someone that can enforce that? There is some revenue that comes from that, I would assume, if we enforce it. So that might be worthy of at least some consideration.
Okay, we'll add parking enforcement to the list and get an estimate as to how much that would cost and how that would look. So Gene will work with the chief on that. Anything further, Councilmember Cuddeback?
No, thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen?
You know, when we're talking about level of service and then looking through the list of duties that these various positions have, I'm just curious on some of them if there's been discussion or a plan of utilizing community volunteers to do some of this stuff, some of the very easily non-confidential administrative stuff. Or, you know, when I was on the Parks Board, we talked a lot about some of the park maintenance stuff, garbage pickup or whatnot, if there's any of that being factored in, or, you know, or can we, as we put forth the plan, maybe this is something for the P4 committee that we work with staff departments to really aggressively look at volunteer programs to help with some of this. I mean, certainly wouldn't eliminate all the duties or take everything off this position's hands, but, you know, can we look at that and try to alleviate some of that as well?
Okay, so what we'll do is we'll go ahead and add a discussion on volunteer to a future agenda. Anything further, Councilmember Rasmussen?
Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Scarborough?
In the thought process of volunteers, I've not been. I know what it did to us at the school district. I don't know what it does to you here at the city, but you bump up against union labor and free labor being free to get, and why aren't you paying somebody to do it from the union? So that'll have to be part of that discussion, or maybe it's already been part of that discussion and it's a non-starter. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Basil, and then Councilmember Hanford.
We have talked about it a little bit. In fact, we have a volunteer, Nancy Abel. She used to work here and retired from Marysville, and she's in here every week. But she is of an excellent employee level, and so we have lucked out having her in here doing some of those tasks that we'll certainly look at it and see where we can fit in some more volunteers. It was interesting on the public records side and the records management side, Liz's predecessor, we gave that task to that individual, and it was so far beyond what her skill set was, and she had years of experience working in clerical. but there's so many laws and rules and regulations about records retention, it is insane. And so we'll certainly look at it, but some of these tasks, you need experts in those fields.
And I guess some of the volunteer efforts, we are seeing some volunteering happening, and actually a lot of volunteering happening in town right now. And I think about the downtown with picking up garbage. I write thank you things on Facebook and cards for people that are volunteering on a frequent basis here in town. So I know there's a lot of volunteerism. You're talking about more of a formal program, and we have other issues that we'll need to. We'll bring it back for more discussion about the trade-offs to doing that, and we'll bring that back. I'll go ahead and acknowledge Councilmember Rasmussen, and we'll go to Councilmember Hanford since we're still. Yeah, go ahead.
And like I said, I'm throwing it out there. So
yeah.
Again, certainly we can dive more into it within the P4 committee. Being said, a lot of that's going to fall with us as well. So.
Thank you, Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to thank all the directors and staff. Obviously, most of us up here know that you've been being overworked, and this is a good reminder of that fact. So we are truly grateful for what you are doing and what you've pulled off out of the hat for the last several years. So this is good material for us to go over, and appreciate you, Mayor, bringing this up.
Thank you.
In January.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
One more thing on the picking up trash or the volunteerism. There's one thing to have an organized volunteer program that will come under scrutiny by the union, in my opinion, as opposed to wondering why Scarborough's walking down Main Street picking up garbage because he wants to. So I don't know what level of volunteering we have. Is it just you see people every once in a while doing it because they're tired of the garbage? Or do we know it's an organized deal?
Is that a question? I'm sorry.
Well,
they are organized things that I was talking about.
Are they organized with the city? Or is it the Chamber of Commerce who said, let's go pick it up?
Sorry, Mr. Farrell.
Thank you, Mayor. I can answer a little bit of that just from the volunteers' experiences that we have in the Parks Department annually. We'll have a group of volunteers through, say, a nonprofit organization. It might be a church, it might be a service organization, and they sign, with us, they sign documents, basically liability documents for the city to go ahead and do the work.
Okay.
And the type of work that we do, we make sure it's appropriate to what the skill level of the group is, and that they're safe and whatnot. And also, but we wouldn't have them doing technical tests, so it's more like litter pickups.
Understood.
Understood. We also get in the nature of Eagle Scout projects for the city, and again, we just try to find a match and make sure all the liability paperwork's figured out. And then another type that we have is the Department of Corrections. They have work crews. We have a number of work crew.
Just like we did at the school district.
And there's a limit to how many that we do.
Understand.
That's acceptable to our bargaining units.
Mm-hmm.
And also the type of work that they do.
But okay.
So those are some things that we do.
So there is some communication with the unions and the level of service that can be provided by the corrections and other people. Okay.
Okay. All right. So the next steps on this, we would like to go over non-utility capital projects with council. Is that, Gene, is that something, I don't see it on the extended agenda for next week, but I see that we have a light agenda next week. Is that something that we might be able to pull together?
Certainly do. So we didn't put it on there because we didn't know what was going to come out of this.
Perfect. Okay, good.
What we were going to have to field, so
okay.
I don't see a whole lot, but I will check in with staff and we'll get it on there next week if we can.
Okay.
That would be the following.
Okay. So the plan here is... what we'll do is staff will go ahead and update the operating costs that you see here to add those items that we talked about tonight, and clarify those things that you inquired about this evening. We will then bring that back with a couple more sheets that relate to capital projects that might not be part of our TIP or CIP right now. These might include things like actually saving money as matches toward some of the capital projects that we apply for, like transportation projects, you know, Turney Place and things like that, that there may be other road projects that we want to have happen sooner, and what would that look like if we put some money away per year toward those projects. It will include things like so you get the picture there. And then if that's a short list, what we may do is see if we've got enough time that evening then to go ahead and start talking about the revenue component of it. And then we'll go from there. Again, the idea being to come back here with a spreadsheet, kind of go over what things look like, depending upon how you all want to approach things, and then me being able to give direction in June. Okay? Anybody have any questions? All right. So let's go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda.
Hey.
Yes, Councilmember Cutaback. Sorry.
I just have one question about the data we had about the five-year forecast.
Okay, go for it.
I want to make sure I understand. So the transfers into the contingency fund are really to get up to Diana reserve policy.
Yes.
And it looks like starting in, 2018, we wanted to start just, and that's pulling it out of the general fund and sticking it in the contingency?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so we're going to go ahead and move on to the next agenda item. This one is Councilmember Reports. So, Councilmember Scarborough.
Well, Patsy and I went to the meeting at Community Transit in Everett, and Patsy has been designated as one of the,
alternate.
Are you the one of, or are you number two, and however it's termed? She and I also talked about being, this is where we talk about moving me, Patsy, from one.
I think one of the council committees were still short a member, the Park and Rec, the P4 committee, so...
We
will bring that up tonight to say where do we need to move that, have that filled. And
the thought was I could move, I'm on the P4, I could move to the one that Patsy's on so she doesn't get overworked, or I could move, if somebody wants to move from the legislative committee, I could move there, and I'll leave that open for discussion.
Is there anybody that wants to move off of one of the other two committees so that Councilmember Scarborough can fill the position? Is that what I'm understanding, on the P4 committee?
Yeah. No, I'm on the P4 committee.
Oh, okay.
Patsy's on, what's the other, in budget?
Oh.
Yeah, if I can.
Yeah, go for it, okay. Patsy.
So, there's a hole on the P4 committee,
right,
currently. I cannot serve on two committees, also being on the Sound Transit. I just can't. I don't have the bandwidth to do it. If someone is willing to move on to P4 and give up a spot on another committee, Councilmember Scarborough is happy to fill another spot, since he's not on any regional committee. He's happy to sit on, I'm speaking for you, sorry, you can speak for yourself, to sit on two committees. So I'm happy to move off finance and HR if no one else wants to move. I think he had an interest in sitting on legislative. I know that you guys sat on that. I think last year, so it would be helpful if P4 was fully
staffed, committed.
Fully committed. So it's just opening it up if anyone wants to move so we can, but he is willing to sit on two committees, which most of us, I'm not willing to do so.
Councilmember Davis?
I'll swap with him. If you want to do that, I am on legislative, but you know, I'll go to P4.
Okay.
Okay.
You can have the legislative slot. So.
Well, I learn a bunch there.
Oh, you know it.
Okay, so could I have a motion to move Councilmember Davis to P4 and Councilmember Scarborough to also serve on the legislative committee?
Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
Can I comment before we answer that? Just
For Councilmember Davis's information, the P4 committee, we're meeting at 10 a.m. on Tuesdays instead of 6, so I want you to keep that in mind before you make that consideration.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
Would there be any, would you entertain later?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
Yeah, to go to 6 o'clock?
Yeah, the, if I may, the reason that we did move it is, one, it's second Tuesday of the month, which is the same day I have Health Board. And then knowing that having it during normal staff hours makes it a lot easier on our staff as well. So those were the two main reasons why we moved it to 10 a.m. But certainly open to other times as well.
Okay. So I'm understanding that that the committee is willing to move to another time that is convenient for all committee members. Is there a desire to make a motion at this time, or Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it would depend on being able to change the time of the meeting, but who else is serving on P4?
Me.
You? Okay, so we...
It doesn't have to be on the third.
And we can always bring this back next week also if folks would like to think about it. You know, Councilmember Rasmussen, you can always touch base with Councilmember Davis and find out what time works for him. That's not a...
I say we do that.
Okay. So let's go ahead and bring this back for next week for discussion.
Yeah, I mean, the next committee is Finance HR, so
yeah.
We've got time.
What?
Listen, I was trying to work out something.
Okay, good. I just make certain I wasn't missing something. Thanks. Okay, so we'll bring this back on Tuesday then next week. Thank you. Anything further, Councilmember Scarborough?
Not that I can think of right now.
Thank you, Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, it was great to get out to attend the Homish
County Cities
meeting. It was great to get Mr. Mayor elected as our representative to the Puget Sound Regional Council, our Economic Development Committee. So that was great. We had a good turnout. I think we were close to a quorum, or had a quorum, or two at each table, or something like that. But we needed the votes, so that was good. And to get to interact with some of the other representatives from the surrounding cities.
Yep.
Good. Got to sit with the old home crew, the A-Town representatives were there, so reminiscing about Arlington days gone by, but no, it was good.
Thank you.
And thank you for stepping up to serve on that. I thought obviously it's good for Monroe to have you in a leadership role with it for us on that. So
thank you.
It'll be good.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
I have nothing tonight. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Yeah. Councilmember Scarborough and Gamble and Nexa Camp had the opportunity to go to Snohomish Cities and or Snohomish County Cities, and congratulations to our mayor for his nomination on economic development. And that was a lot of fun. I hadn't been to one of those yet, and I had a blast. It was good to meet everyone and talk and found a lot about our health board members, which was nice because we don't give them a lot of time in the meetings, so it's good to see them as well and talk. But yeah, it was great conversations, and look forward to the possibility of having it here in Monroe again this year.
We will.
Good.
Yes. I'll get into that when I do the mayor report.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then while we're on committee reports, I'll just say that for the P4 committee, tentatively set at this point for February 9th, but for council, if there's anything that you want to see come from our committee, please let me know, and staff as well. And I think they're still working on a work plan for the year. Up for discussion amongst the rest of the council, but anything that you want to see from the P4 committee, please let us know, and we'll certainly include that information. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Councilmember Quebec.
Councilmember Scarborough attended the Sound Transit, the board formation meeting. there's 9 middle-sized cities, and we fit in there, Monroe does, so they're able to pick 3 board members and 2 alternates. So I am chosen as an alternate, so I will be attending those meetings. They're the first Thursday of the month at 3. And what was discussed at their board meeting last week, they showed the results of the levy and where cities approved and didn't approve of the levy for Sound Opportunity Transit. So I'll be bringing that back to you. I asked for the slides, so I'll forward that to you so you can kind of see where the cities lined up, and then I'll forward you a list of the board members who are current. So, and I'll let you know kind of what's going on there, because obviously transportation and people getting to work and issues that we have are a big issue for Monroe. And then also last week I attended the Growth Management Board hearing at the Duval Library, and I think March 3rd is when the hearings board is going to come back with a ruling. I have to say that our attorney, Zach Lell, did a great job representing the city, so I want to comment that he did a great job.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, the paper, the Monroe Community Coalition is partnering with Galaxy Theaters, and they are doing a free showing of the movie, our documentary, Paper Tigers. Mm-hmm. One night only, Monday, February 22nd, 6:30. That there's already a waiting list. And
they're doing the second screening.
Oh, wonderful. Great. Because the
22nd or 23rd?
Monday, February 22nd, 6:30 p.m. You have to go to their website to register now and get the admission's free, but the ticket's required for entrance. But it's it has to do with struggling teens and... I don't know if you want to expand more on it. If you probably know more about it, but
it's pretty much it. It's managing and working with teens, struggling teens, whether it be through school bullying, online for runaways, and addictions as well. And then at the end of the screening, I understand that there's a, I can't remember the person's name, but there's a discussion format, I guess, with someone that's got experience, subject matter expert, I guess. So, yeah, it looks like a great opportunity.
Yeah, should be really good, especially for people dealing with those individuals. So, that's it.
Thank you very much. Let's go out to staff. Mr. Worthen? Okay, Mr. Farrell?
Thank you, Mayor. This Sunday is the Officer Jamie Bindle Memorial Run. Sunday at Sky River Park. The run starts at 10 a.m. And you can register online or you can register there in person. So it's up to date. The other thing I want to mention is the next couple days I'll be in the Risk Management School for Parks training. It's sponsored by our insurance carrier, WCIA, and also WRPA. So that's in Seattle.
Thank you. Any questions for Mike? Okay. Ms. Nelson?
Nothing for Mike.
Any questions for Ms. Nelson? Okay. Mr. Osaki?
Councilmember Kodovac mentioned the hearing board compliance hearing last week, so thank you. And then next week, we have an intake meeting scheduled to accept the building permit application from the school district for the Park Place and Middle School renovation, which will be a pretty significant project. There's been a lot of coordination going on between all staff, departments, and the school district meeting up to this. We're hoping that review process will go pretty smoothly. And then, to some extent, speaking of the hearing board, I actually have a colleague and friend who used to be a member of the hearing board, and I know the city council was talking about planning commission compensation, you were talking about training, and he actually does training for various boards and commissions, and he does it for free. So I'm hoping at this point in time we're scheduling some training for the Planning Commission to talk about the Growth Management Act, the framework, relationships between the Planning Commission and the elected officials for their meeting on February 8th. And if that does get confirmed, I'll send an email out to the City Council, and you're more than welcome to come and attend and just sit in and listen to that training as well. So that's it.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Osaki? Okay, and how is building and permitting going right now? You had some pre-apps over the last couple of weeks, or
During the course of the past couple months, we've had like a pre-app for 50 lot flat, pre-app for 93 lot flat, and then just a lot of the smaller short flats and items like that. So it's always just a matter of whether they actually go the next step and make the submittal, but there's items in the pipeline definitely on a residential development.
Okay, and how are things going with the Downtown Association? I know that Christy's been attending those meetings.
Our senior planner, Christy, is attending the Downtown Mineral Association. We actually have pretty much a final draft of an RFP to go out to consultants to work with the city and the Downtown Mineral Association on formalizing or creating a downtown Main Street organization by 2017, and that's part of the $25,000 that was budgeted this year to hire a consultant to work towards a Main Street program in the city by 2017. So I'm hoping that goes out this week.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Osaki? Okay, seeing none. Mr. Feilberg?
Nothing to add.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Feilberg? Okay. Chief.
Excuse me. Many of you probably read about the arrest of a school employee who was worked as a treasurer for the PTA and we arrested for embezzlement. The dollar value was over about a one-year period of like $13,000. And I might say that the PTA is a volunteer organization, and the school, of course, would like me to add that she doesn't have an ability to touch financial funds in school districts. That's all.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody have any questions for the chief? Okay, so we'll come on up here to me real quick. Last week, after Thursday night, I want each of you to know that I was very happy to see so many of you involved in so many things on Thursday night. I felt very similar to how I did when I was coaching lacrosse, and we just had a really good game. Seeing five of us at Snohomish County Cities, two of you at Community Transit, one of you coming to both, it really gladdened my heart to know that we are getting out there, people are seeing us, people are beginning to take notice, and for us to have influence in what comes to Monroe, not just the policies and the laws and things like that, but also the funding for projects, it means that we need to be out there. We need to be seen. And I know that sometimes, going and just socializing with people, it may not seem like you're actually doing the job, but you are doing the job. They're seeing you. You're bringing up issues in your city. You're learning about things that are going on in other cities. And then you're bringing that information back here. So I'm looking forward to more of our council member reports being very much like we heard this evening, talking about the committees you attended, going over the agendas, slating things to come back to the council for a little bit more discussion if necessary, like things with the health district or community transit or PSRC or whatever the case may be, so that we can provide input to you as our representatives on these boards and commissions. So thank you. With that said, Snohomish County Cities will, I've gone ahead and I've invited them, I've volunteered us rather to be a host for the May meeting, and so I will be working with staff to help make that happen, we're going to do that. Does anybody have any questions about that? And then I'll
May what?
The Which Thursday of the month is it?
Third.
Yeah, it's the third Thursday in May. I just would need to take a look at that. And those are monthly meetings, so I encourage. Yes.
I'm just trying to think of a venue.
The last time we did it at Paula's Wine Knot. Usually there are not as many people as there were at last week's meeting. That is probably the busiest meeting of the two-year cycle that they go through because of all the elections that occur. And we were able to fit everybody in Paula's Wine Knot. I think we had one of the larger attended ones that year, except for the election night at about 40 people that showed up. Thursday was unusual, but we probably had about 80 or more people there. What's that?
El Lago,
there you go. So we'll look to see what sort of venue we can secure for that. It might be El Lago. All right, some other things we went through Thursday, Friday. Okay, so we had the Elite Training Academy ribbon cutting on Saturday. Coach Bumpus and his wife Jen have just opened up a new business, and just like with the Eagles building, when you walk in the face of that building, you don't expect the building to be so big. That building is huge. There's more than just that front door where Sam's used to be. If you ever went into Sam's Cats and Dogs when they were there, there's a lot more space behind that wall and then behind another wall. So that's a wonderful thing to have had come to our community. The Tractor Supply opened. They had a grand opening over the weekend, and I think they're going to have a ribbon cutting in the next couple weeks. They, as I understand it, were so busy preparing for their grand opening that they weren't able to do the ribbon cutting on that day, and I'm just happy they're open. And talking about ribbon cuttings and groundbreakings, we do not have planned a groundbreaking for H3O this week. We have requested that the past due rent be paid before I go out and do a groundbreaking, and then find out that there's an issue on Tuesday next week. So we will let you know when we're aware of the groundbreaking occurring and also when we receive the past due rent. Any questions on that? Councilmember Rasmussen, and then Councilmember Gamble.
I just want to thank you for taking that stand and making that a point and emphasizing that past due rent. So thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble?
No, I forgot to bring that up. We did make the trek over to the Tractor Supply places.
Oh, nice.
And it was great. I mean, Saturday was obviously very rainy and whatever, but they both weekends, and there was popcorn and 4-H was out there, and there was all kinds of, the store was packed.
Nice.
And all kinds of pets in there. I don't know. I missed because I was just going through the store and looking at everything that was offered. They must have had some sort of free pet screening or something, because there were dogs everywhere.
Nice.
But yeah, no, it was great.
Good. A couple other things then. This morning, both Gene and I attended SCIT, Snohomish County Committee on Something Improvement Transportation. Regional Transportation. They are an adjunct to the Economic Alliance of Snohomish County. We have not been due-paying members of that alliance. It's something that we should be paying dues for, and so Gene's going to find out what the cost is. And they, both the Economic Alliance and also SCIT, have are part of the endorsement letter that I'm going to pass around in a minute, the current set of logos. Councilmember Gamble?
Only one other thing I was going to say, I forgot, was on the opening of the Elite Center. That's fantastic. I mean, that actually will bring revenue back to the city, too, because I know our sports organizations, because we only had the one in the top 10, we're doing a lot of business outside, going whether it was to North Shore, and we're making the trek to Snohomish Sports Institute on a regular basis. And selfishly, I won't have to drive myself to Snohomish anymore.
Nice.
We're right down, so that was very exciting.
Yeah.
Very, very exciting.
Paul said he wanted to do it.
Yep, that's exactly. Coach Bumpus said that that's one of the primary reasons why he did it, was so that he could keep folks here in Monroe.
Yes, we're extremely excited.
I mentioned Bellevue, Seattle.
Yeah, that's where we were going.
Okay, so for SCIT, then, we talked about 522 and a couple of the other projects. And we talked about three different tiers, a tier one, a tier two, and a tier three. Tier one are the projects that have already been funded as part of the Connecting Washington package. That's the transportation package. Tier two would be those things, the four projects that are left that didn't make it, that SCIT had supported before. Those include the Paradise Lake Road interchange and the bypass for US 2. And so I think they're making the argument that the widening, that 3 mile gap, that one lane section of road, making that two lanes both directions, that be part of the tier two. And then they were talking about tier three being those new projects that have come up, and they're like, those folks are just going to need to go ahead and market those, lobby for those, you know, get in there and fight it out. But they really want to make certain the tier one happen and be there to support funding the tier two projects also. So that was good to hear. And then this afternoon I got a phone call, drop of the hat, King 5 wanted to interview me out at Echo Lake Road Interchange, and so if you see any Facebook posts of me being interviewed, yeah, that did happen. And since it happened at 5:30, I'm not certain what news cycle they were trying to hit, but if you see me on there and I'm fumbling over my words, I apologize. It's only my third time on camera. Let me see if there's anything else. It was just a really busy week, and yeah, you'll see anything else that is of importance. We had four pages on Monroe this week. The next item that I would just want to pass down, we're now going to get into sort of the lobbying things. First, there is a Snohomish County Legislators Luncheon in Olympia on Tuesday, so a week from today, February 2nd, from 11:30 to 1:30. I'm going to pass this down. If anybody here is able to attend it, I would ask you to contact Gene and let him know that you're interested. This is going to be challenging for me to attend. Again, it's 11:30 to 1:30 in the middle of the workday. But if you're able to attend, it's important for us to keep our face down there in front of folks. Gene, do you have anything to add on this, since this was discussed after I left?
I don't, other than Economic Alliance asked for a representative from the city to be there, so if a council member can't, I will definitely be down there. I think it's important that, like the mayor said, that we keep in front of these folks if we're going to make this 522 a priority, get attention.
So if anybody knows, drop the hat, Groundhog Day, you're able to go in the middle of the day, let me know. Now? If not, please email Gene and let him know. It'd be great if you could CC me in that, so that I know that we're covered. And Gene certainly can go down, and you guys can carpool, or if that's something you want to do.
Tuesday the
2nd. Yes, 1 week from today, 11:30 to 1:30, plus travel time. So it's pretty much your whole day. And we would greatly appreciate anybody that could go down and attend. All right. The next item, thank you all for considering that. The next item that I want to pass down, and this is just one copy, so Gene will come by and pick it up. This is the capital budget request that has been submitted for the Lake Tai Park Athletic Fields. This is a synthetic turf that was given to our lobbyists to hand out to legislators. The next one that I'm going to pass down is a letter that we sent off to probably 30 to 50 stakeholders on our own, and then also the chamber at my request at the chamber meeting I attended last week, sent this off to all their members, inviting people to send their logos to us. And so I'm going to pass that down. I've also got an information sheet that is being handed out down in Olympia right now that talks about the 522 project. And then lastly, we've got this information sheet, which is the one that we're taking down, that has all the logos. Drum roll, please. That's all the logos we have right now. So let me go ahead and pass this down. Based on what we're doing, Marysville and Everett now are trying to put together their own sheet with logos on it. Snohomish County added their logo yesterday, and I'm not certain if it's on there. We also had Lakeside add their logos today, and Master Builders Association. Yeah, that looks like it's fairly updated. So we'll just go ahead and pass that down. If you have any other businesses that would like to have their logos on here, or if you work for one, please let us know tomorrow before close of business, so that that can be added to the material that we're going to take down on Thursday.
That's
Okay, any questions for me? And then we'll go through the lobbyist report. Okay, so let's go ahead and hop on the lobbyist report. Oh, Councilmember Cutback, I'm sorry.
So the capital budget request, is this for the supplemental capital budget this year?
That's the hope, but there's a chance that it'll probably get pushed off, but we're at least asking.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to make sure this year supplemental next, and then if it doesn't get funded this year, we'll put it in the regular cycle next year. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Brazel.
I just want to add on that. We have received some questions from some of our legislators about the use of chrome rubber infill. You might see it all over the internet. People are saying there's a potential connection between cancer and chrome rubber. Mr. Farrell has looked into alternative infills. We've responded back to our lobbyists if that is something that we could entertain on this field if it is funded. There's several alternatives, and that's all I'll say. But anyway, we have responded back to our lobbyists, and they're passing that word on that we're flexible with the design.
Okay. Any questions on the capital request? All right. So let's go ahead and hop into the hyperlink then on Councilmember Hanford.
Sorry.
It's okay.
For the lake tie, was there a thought the process of getting lights for evening things at that location or not?
At this time, that's not involved in the ask.
But for future,
it could be
planning possibly.
And we could certainly run conduit. We could identify locations if we can't afford it today, and maybe run conduit to make it a little bit less expensive in the future.
Yeah, the only reason I ask is because I know driving through Woodinville, right downtown, they've got their whole ballpark lit up, and it would seem like a good revenue source if you're renting out every night for several nights a week.
Yeah.
If it's small weather field, then they could be used even if it's raining and not be damaging it. So,
yep.
Thanks.
Yep. Welcome. Okay, so if everybody would be kind enough to click on the hyperlink for the lobbyist report. And then go to page 3 of 4. We'll go through the. We'll just take a look at the matrix. Does anybody have anything that they would like to change? You can see that we have a lot of monitor on here. Yep, I'll let you. Okay, is there anything on there that you have questions about right now? It's all marked monitor except for a couple. Councilmember Gamble?
Well, are you going to be speaking to the 6115?
We're going to come to that in just a second, yeah.
Okay, and I'll hold.
Mr. Brazel?
The only one that we haven't really talked about, but Liz is doing a good job monitoring, is one in regards to public records.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's doing some footwork right now to find out where we're at on that. Regionally, and so we could probably bring that back as early as next week, potentially, Liz. We'd be ready to talk about that, and we may want to change monitor to a different position, depending on how that bill's working out.
Okay. Do we know what the voting rights one is? Oh, Councilmember Hanford, sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. The marijuana limitations House bill, is that... It looks like it's willing to limit our ability.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah, which is why we're opposing it. So what they wanted, if I remember the synopsis on it correctly, they wanted to prohibit cities from prohibiting the marijuana uses without a vote of the people. So since we've taken the position of not allowing them to... we would want to oppose that rather than support it or monitor it.
So we're opposing and not monitoring that one.
Is it marked?
Yes.
So we're opposing it. Correct.
Okay. I just wanted to confirm that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Were there any other items that staff had identified as having concerns about? All right. Again, I encourage you all to look these over, and if you've got any questions about them, just let us know in advance of the meeting or even at the meeting, and we will chase down the additional information. Question for you, is this format useful? Okay. This is only the second one or third one that we've brought, the second one that we've brought forward, and I just want to make certain that what we're bringing forward is in a useful format for the council. So if there's anything that we could be doing differently, please let us know. The last item then would be this 6115 that was handed out at your positions. I'm going to go ahead and let Mr. Brazel take this.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Currently, AWC is strongly opposing this. I'll ask Diane to go ahead and chime in on the particulars and answer any questions, but I definitely want to get some feedback to our lobbyists on that tomorrow if Council can make a decision this evening.
The city of Monroe currently has a 10% utility tax on the water utility, and that's revenue to our general fund. It's a little under $500,000 revenue every year, and this rate has been at 10% since January 1st, 2008. I don't know, before that it was 7.5%, and I don't know how much longer before that this tax was in effect. I know the 7.5% was at least 2 years before that. We've had this tax for a long time. It's a loss of $183,000 to our general fund if this bill goes through and caps it at 6%.
Okay, Council, do you have any questions? Do you want to monitor, oppose, support? Councilmember Hanford?
At this point, I would say I would agree with AWC, we should oppose it.
Okay. All right, Councilmember Hanford, you still have the floor?
That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback?
Yeah, I agree. Just from the limited, I know. Diane, do you know what the rationale is doing? You know, limiting this to 6%? Yeah, why?
All the other utility taxes are limited at 6% right, but always have been as far as I know.
Okay.
The only reason we can do more is because we own the utility. If you own the utility, you can do it as high as you like. And it's a revenue generator for the general fund. You know, general fund is funded by taxes. And the reason it's brought up is, I guess, they feel that it's a regressive tax or it's unfair because it's more than the cities that own their own utilities can do more than the 6%, and so they're trying to limit the city's ability to do that.
Okay. Is there a consensus from council to oppose the 6115? Okay, so I'm seeing heads nod. Okay, so we'll go ahead and put ourselves down as opposing 6115. And Gene, can you follow up on 2SHB 1745, voting rights? It's called voting rights. It's 2SHB 1745.
Okay.
And I would think this was in last year's also.
Okay.
For those of you that are clicking, click on the link, and then what you want to do is scroll down to the middle of that next page and click on the click on original bill under bill documents. And if I remember correctly, this last year, the idea here was that, well, you can see in here, having districts for voting, and my question is whether or not this would apply to the city of Monroe. I think that one of the reasons why this came forward was to bring forward a requirement for district voting and adjusting districts for issues of representation on elected bodies in cities last year, and I just want to see if this would affect us here in Monroe. I don't know if it's the same bill as last year, but if it's going to result in districts here in Monroe, we probably should be aware of that. Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, not to go back, but these papers just got to me a little bit ago.
Fine.
So, back to the 522 discussions. Was there, I can't remember if it's just that I saw someone post on Facebook about it or we talked about this, but was there any discussion or has there been any discussion about making the right lane from just after the bridge to the Echo Lake interchange, if you're going up the hill, so that it says slow vehicles only, or and no one ever goes
on the shoulder.
On the shoulder, even though they may be going slow. Is there any talk about making that like the trestle where it says from 3 to 7 p.m. this lane can be used and do it in the morning hours?
Yeah, we haven't done that just yet. We've been focusing our lobbying right now on freeing up the $10 million on Paradise and allowing it for design on the Gap also. I have seen that on Facebook also. It was posted, I think, on the mayor page twice, doing something similar to that, and that would be one of those interim things that we would go ahead and bring up with DOT, I think, following the session. So we've just been focusing our efforts on getting the legislation changed to free up $10 million.
Okay.
But that good catch. And yeah, I think we want to discuss that at the end of the legislative session.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I like that on the trestle. I use it all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything further, Council? All right. Let's go to Gene. Gene, what have you got for us?
Draft agenda for February 2nd, 2016. We have a consent agenda. Under unfinished business, we have discussion in regards to impact fee deferral system. And then we have the City Council Finance Human Resources Committee report.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and add, I assume under unfinished business, the continuing conversation on the strategic financial plan with a focus on the capital. And we'll include an update, if staff is able to do it, of the O&M that we went through this evening, adding some of those items. So we can go ahead and continue the conversation about irrigation. What does that mean? What are we not irrigating today that we could be irrigating, and what would the cost be? If staff's not able to do that, we'll move that to another Tuesday. But I do want to continue the conversation with the capital. The other thing is that we have the work program for 2017. And so I'd like the council to see what we're working on in 2017 and approximate dates for things to be coming to council. That work program will help you in determining what sort of things the council may want to assign to the committees for more detailed conversation. So I think that's really important that you all have that opportunity to review that. And one of the things I'm trying to do this year is I'm trying to show you the target, the goal for everything that we're working on this year, so that we can keep focus and get things done, like update our development regulations, do things in the permit center, and other things that are not community development also. Okay. Does anybody have any questions about next week's agenda or requested additions? Okay, let's go to the extended agenda. And we've already talked about February 2nd. So for February 9th, if we don't get to the revenue conversation, we'll probably have the revenue conversation on February 9th. Sorry, I'm already thinking January.
Okay.
That's next year, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Does anybody have any requested additions to the extended agenda? All right. Do you have anything else, Jim? There being no other further business for the city this evening, Councilmember Hanford.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Gamble to adjourn. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. We're adjourned.
Jeffrey, I'll see you.
line, but we